Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
All right, get your questions about clocks and watches in, because our Monday expert is a horologist. He's Blair Shellard, the owner of Time Central in Rotorua, and he's been in the industry for 30 years. He joins us now from his workshop. Hi, Blair.
Hello, Jesse.
Horologist, is that what I say?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, what an interesting... Yes, go on.
Horage, I think, is the French, probably pronounced terribly, but... Yeah, that just means clock in French.
How did you get into this industry, into this area of expertise?
I would say chance. I was I popped into student job search in my first year of university, and Citizen Watches had an ad. They needed someone to change about 2,000 batteries for them. So I got that job. And when I'd finished those, there was more for me to do, and I ended up working there for a number of years.
Fantastic. And so I guess changing the batteries involved taking them apart, did it?
Yeah, pop the back off. And then they taught me how to hold a pair of tweezers, proper watchmaking tweezers, and pry the battery out, do the necessary tests, and put the new battery in. So by the time I'd done 2,000, I'd built up some skill with the tweezers.
Yeah. How small are those parts in there?
Sometimes very small. On a small women's watch, it's not unusual to be able to put the movement, that's the mechanism's called a movement, on one fingertip and have some room to spare. So when you get down to some of the smaller screws and some of the wheels, we're talking very small.
Yeah. And so what did your training look like?
Well, I'm a bit unusual in that I didn't do a formal apprenticeship. At Citizen, I learnt on the job, and that was a sort of a service center type work. We had shelves and shelves of spare parts. So if something was wrong, it was fairly simple to just go and grab new parts and put them in. And then I ended up in a shop in West Auckland, Precision Watch Company, and I learned clocks there. And that was really just learn on the job.
Is it rare for someone to be into both clocks and watches?
Not rare, but it's more common to specialize in one or other. So there are a number of us who can do both, and I'm happy working on either. But if I had to make a choice, I'd pick clocks.
Yeah. It's interesting. My producer's written a suggested question for you here, and it would never have occurred to me to ask this question. But the question is there a future for clocks?
I would say so. I think smart watches have made a bit of a dent on the traditional watch market. But, you know, our whole days are regulated by time. So we're always looking at our wrist or the wall or something. So you always need timekeepers around. And aside from that, when it comes to my job servicing antique clocks, there is stacks of work around there for us. It's not unusual to have lead times of well over a year working on clocks. I would say the future is reasonably good.
People who bring them in for service and repair obviously care enough about them and want to have them in their lives enough to keep them working.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's sentimental value. By way of example, I had a clock come in last week. It came out of a World War I tank, and it was, pilfered. It was removed from the tank after the war by the tank captain. He survived the war took the clock home as a memento, and it's still in the family, and they very much want to get it going again. So, you know, all sorts of sentimental value attached to them.
Yes, I guess in a world where everything is new and high-tech and disposable, the idea of holding on to something that has a bit of a story is quite appealing.
That's right.
Is that the appeal for you, that you're dealing with things that do have great value, not just financial but sentimental?
Yeah, I'm much more interested in the sentimental value aspect of it. If it came down to pure finance, a lot of the work I do doesn't really justify the expense.
Right.
If it wasn't sentimental value, I wouldn't have had this job for 30-odd years.
You do big clocks? What's the biggest clock you've ever fixed?
Biggest clock actually is the clock in the clock tower here in Rotorua. Partial repair to that one, but a few years ago I did a major overhaul on the tower clock in the old government building down in Wellington. It's now Victoria University and overlooks the Beehive.
And a nice change not to be using the magnifying glass.
Yeah, oh, it was hard work though. Physically, it was incredibly heavy, big, big cast iron components, and up in a roof space, very hard to get them out and then get them back in again. But, you know, very interesting and probably one of the more enjoyable jobs I've done.
Is it just like a watch blown up?
In some ways, yes, because you've got power supply at one end, in this case, weights, and you've got what's called the escapement at the other end, which is the part that does the actual timekeeping. In that regard, yes, but probably is where the similarities end. You can't work on them the same, that's for sure.
If you've got a question for Blair Shellard, who's our expert on watches and clocks, you can text your question through to me on 2101. So when someone comes in with a watch for you, what are some common issues they're asking you about?
Well, more often than not, it's a battery. The battery's gone flat. Or there are a number of cosmetic issues like scratched or broken glasses on the front. The crown, which is the winder on the side, might be broken off. Watch leaked, that's a common one. Strap replacements, all those sorts of things are fairly common. And then you get the more complicated jobs where a battery's not going to fix it and we need to do what we call a service or an overhaul, where we strip the whole thing apart, clean everything, put it back together again, lubricate it, regulate it, which is adjust the timekeeping, test it, and then give it back to the customer.
A watch service, that's something I haven't thought about before. If you've got a watch of some quality, is it a good idea to build a service or the idea of a service into its lifetime?
It very much is. It's not unusual to get 60s and 70s vintage Omegas come in, and the customer is terribly proud that they've never had it serviced. The problem is, it's a bit like going to a mechanic and saying you've never had your car serviced in 100,000 kilometers. They're not going to be pleased because every single component's worn. So most manufacturers recommend every 3 to 5 years get the watch serviced, which is stripped down, cleaned. Some components may need replacing. Seals that keep dust and moisture out of the case often want replacing. Those sorts of things. So yeah, service intervals, very good idea, especially if you've got a more expensive or boutique watch.
What sort of choices do you have to make when you're buying a watch? What is the first big choice?
How much money you want to spend is probably the first big choice.
Yeah.
Or what you're looking for in a watch, because, you know, Casio G-Shocks are terribly popular because they're so robust. They just keep on going and you never really have to worry about them. If you're looking for something different, you can get into the higher grade Swiss automatic watches. They're mechanical. They don't keep as good a time, but there's a lot more craftsmanship technology gone into making them.
How much should one spend on a watch?
I can't tell you that because it's not my decision to make. Everyone's got a different finance. Everyone's got different amount of money to spend and different expectations out of a watch.
There's no handy like 3 months of salary or something like that.
No. It's not a wedding ring. It's a or engagement ring. It's a watch, and it's entirely up to you. For some people, it's purely utilitarian. You just need to be able to keep the time. Other people take a great deal of joy in wearing something that they know has a lot of very precise design and manufacturing's gone into.
For your watch expert, Mike asks, is there a trick to cleaning up battery leakage?
Yes, there is. First of all, take it to an actual watchmaker. Quite often we need to take the circuit out of the watch and clean that. There are some solvents are available that are safe to use and others are not. I use a form of white spirits if it's a minor leak, but other times we got to get a bit more complicated. We use fiberglass brushes to scratch dried up acid off components. It can be quite complicated.
Thank you. Sally wants to know what to do if a watch has been in salt water. The person wearing it fell out of a boat. She asks, is it worth fixing?
Well, it depends if the salt water's got into the watch or not. Most watches now are water resistant to some degree, and they'll survive it just fine. If it's got salt water in it, it may well have wrecked it, because salt will rust out a watch extremely quickly.
Sorry to hear that. What is your favourite watchmaker quality-wise, asks one person.
Quality-wise, yeah, it's a bit like how long is a piece of string, because, again, it depends what you're looking for. I would say I like Rolex. Not that I would want to own a Rolex in particular, but I enjoy working on them because they're very well made. They're relatively straightforward and comparatively easy to service. And because the components are very top high quality, they don't tend to wear as fast as some other brands. So, yeah, I like Rolex.
Did you get to fix Edmund Hillary's Rolex once? Sir Edmund Hillary.
Yes, I did. Yes, it was a watch he bought in, I believe he bought it in Hong Kong, and he wore it on the expedition he did with Graham Dingle, jet boating up the Ganges River.
Oh, yeah.
And Sir Edmund had apparently had the habit of buying a watch. If sometimes he'd buy them, sometimes he'd be given to him. He would just wear it until it broke, and then he'd buy another one. This one was stopped, but nothing terribly wrong with it, so I serviced it and got it going again.
Here's another great question, one I wouldn't have come up with myself. When you're working on clocks and watches all the time, do you find you end up thinking about time more often?
Probably more the opposite. When I'm concentrating, there's a lot of stuff going on around me that I'm not aware of. So I have a workshop full of clocks ticking away, and a lot of them are chiming and making noise. Hours can go past and I won't hear any of them if I'm not. So yeah, it's really, really the opposite.
Is there any truth to the idea, asks one person, that some people just can't wear a watch because it will always stop? I've heard it may be due to the magnetic field or something.
Yeah, I've heard it myself. I'm on the fence about that one. I'm dubious, but sorry, that was my cell phone going. I'm dubious about it, but I can't say for certain.
Okay.
It would be rare. Let's put it that way.
What do we mean by an automatic watch?
So an automatic is automatic winding, which means it's a mechanical watch. It uses a spring to power the gear train. And as you wear it, there's a weight inside the watch called a rotor that turns and spins some gears to wind the spring.
And are they still widely available?
Oh, very much so, yes. All the high-grade watches are mechanical. Rolex don't make a battery-driven watch, for instance. All of theirs are going to be either manual wind or automatic, and the vast majority are automatic. It's the same with a lot of Tag Heuers and Omegas and a lot of other, even cheaper brands. The more expensive ones are all mechanical and mostly automatic.
Thank you. Tony got lots of messages coming in. Tony asks regarding scratches on a watch. If the glass is unusual and possibly not available anymore, can you repair it like a windshield, or can you make a replacement glass, asks Tony.
Glass cuttings is theoretically, yes, you can. You could probably fill it. I don't know how well that would work. And theoretically, we could use grades of diamond paper to polish the glass back. It's not really worth the time invested. If we've got an unusual glass, I send it to a specialist glass cutter, and that's a trade in itself. We can get a custom glass cut for it.
By the way, for people who do, and if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Blair Shallard, who's a horologist, means he specialises in watches and clocks, and happy to answer some of your questions on 2101. If you do have something that needs doing to a watch, can you just take it to a jeweller, or are you better to seek out an actual watchmaker or watch repairer?
I'm going to stand up for my trade a bit here. Watchmaking is a very distinct trade from jewellery. So I will always say find a watchmaker. Find a company that actually specialises in doing watches. Having said that, we do trade work for various jeweler shops, and they will often send it out to a watchmaker, and you get the same service. But you, my take would be go to the person, talk to the person who's actually going to be doing the work.
Why do some watches cost so much money?
Well, there's two answers to that. One is you have to pay for their marketing budget. That's the cynical answer. The other is, and this divides into two as well, at a certain price point, you're paying for very high-tech machinery. And at a price point much higher than that, you're paying for very, very skilled artisans who are spending months at a time actually making the watch.
So you're paying for hours and hours of work that's gone into it.
Yes, it's not unusual for at the very high end for a watchmaker to spend 6 months or more hand
Gosh.
beveling every component, hand polishing, hand engraving maybe. Yeah, it's they can be very, very time consuming pieces. But we're talking up in the hundreds of thousands to $1 million point price point at
Yeah.
that point. Now, the lower sort of normal, say, Swiss automatic level, you're paying for some very, very clever machinery. A lot of the components are made by CNC machines. They're automatic machines, so there's a load of metal stock loaded at one end, and that automatically feeds into the machine, which cuts it by computer control. And then the pieces are put in a rack and placed under an overhead camera, which scans them, measures them to, within microns, we're talking thousandths of a millimeter, and then programs a machine to offset for wear on the tooling. It's very sophisticated, and that sort of technology does need to be paid for.
If you've got any questions, you can text us on 2101. Is it hard finding parts for old watches?
Yes and no. A lot of us have collections of old watches and old parts, and the trade in New Zealand is pretty good in that we're mostly connected to each other. So if we need something, we can send out an SOS email, and normally within an hour or so, someone says, "Hey, I've got that." At the newer level, there are a lot of companies that are restricting parts, so you can't. Myself as an independent, I can't buy parts for a number of watch brands now, which is one of the reasons I'm quite happy that I'm more focused on clocks these days.
We should spend some time talking about clocks. Apparently, they haven't always had two hands.
No, that's true. I actually only learned this by chance last week. The earliest mechanical clocks were made for monasteries because back in the, and I'm not exactly sure when they invented them, but say the 1500s, no, most people worked off the land. They got up at dawn, they worked, they finished when the dark came, and that was it. They didn't know the time. The monks, on the other hand, lived a very regimented life, and they needed to know when they had to do various tasks, a lot of them being prayers. So, seven prayers, I think, during the day, and then one in the middle of the night. So, the first mechanical timekeepers were in monasteries, and the hours themselves were adjustable. So, the part that did the timekeeping was called a foliot. It was a bar with a weight at either end, and it oscillated on a pivot, ticked back and forth. And in summer, when the days were longer, the weights would be at the outside end to make it tick slower. And in winter, when the days were shorter, they'd run the weights right to the inside. So the intervals that the clock measured were much shorter. So the hours themselves were adjustable. And then when clocks became more mainstream, very early on, they simply didn't keep good enough time to justify a second hand. And then when the pendulum clock was invented in the, I believe it was 1657, the first pendulum was invented. For a long time afterwards, they still only put one hand on because most people were illiterate and they couldn't read a two-hand clock.
So it's a comparatively modern thing.
It actually is, yes, it is modern. Clocks really came into their own in the 1700s. There was a sort of a great explosion in scientific discovery in that time, and clockmaking was at the forefront of those scientific endeavors. But there was a real problem that needed to be solved in finding longitude at sea, because finding latitude, which is how far you are between the poles, was relatively easy by doing astronomical observations, but you could sail down to a given latitude and then you had no idea how far around the world you were from east to west. And it was a matter of life and death guessing correctly. So, because you could sail 6 weeks in the wrong direction and then have to turn around. And you didn't know if another week would land you at your destination or not. So the Board of Longitude was set up in 1714 to find a solution. And astronomers and clockmakers were competing for a £20,000 prize to come up with an accurate way of measuring the local time of a ship at sea. And they would offset that from their home port time and figure out how far around the world they were. I just got that back to front. They needed to have a clock that could accurately keep their home port time. They could measure the local time. They could always find midday, and offset that against the time on their thermometer, which was their extremely accurate clock.
And work out where they were.
Yeah, and so it was a really big deal because the British Navy, for instance, lost an entire fleet by crashing into some islands because they didn't realize where they were. And so a lot of lives were saved when they finally discovered it, when the clockmakers won and they designed clocks that were hyper accurate over long distances.
What's a good way to work out the value of an antique watch that you might have, or an old watch that you might have?
Now, I myself am not an expert on dating, either dating watches or valuing them. I'm what you call a jobbing watchmaker, so I deal with whatever comes in across the bench, and I'm not highly specialized in one area. Mostly, though, the value of a piece is going to be what it would sell for at auction. So if I'm in a jam, I go and talk to some auctioneers about it.
Why does changing a watch battery cost so much? I can buy a perfectly good watch at the warehouse for less than the price of getting a new battery, reports one person.
Yes, you can. And that is a very poorly made watch. Having said that, the poorly made watches do keep good time. But when you have a higher grade watch and a good quality watch, it might need, for instance, pressure testing for water resistance. Now, watches are not pressurized, they have O-rings that keep water out. And when a watch comes into me, for instance, the battery part of it's relatively simple. I can pop the back off, I can take the old battery out, check it's working, and put a new battery in. But then I spend a lot longer cleaning up the seals and cleaning up the dirt that collects around the outside of the watch and making sure none of it ends up in the case. Sometimes I've got to take the mechanism right out to do that. There's actually quite a lot that goes into it. So, and then you have the issue that we're not just changing batteries, we're doing a lot of different jobs and we need a lot of different tooling and it's all extremely expensive. And then, of course, you've got the experience. Those of us who are in the trade, we've spent years learning things and that needs to be paid for.
Is there much of a community of you in New Zealand?
Yes, there is. We have annual general meetings of what's called the Horological Institute. We have a yearly get together and auction as I will say it's a shrinking trade. As older members retire or die, then their tools come up for sale and we all gather to haggle over them. But and we share information and generally have a good old time. So yeah, a lot of us know each other and I think there's a fair sense of community.
Graham in Wellington says we've got an old German or Dutch clock powered by two falling weights on chains. It may have been overwound at some stage, so we're wondering how we release it and restore it to working condition.
I can say with almost 100% certainty it hasn't been overwound. We hear that at least once a week, I think, in the shop. Someone says, "What's been overwound?" No, if you physically jam a weight in the bottom of the clock so that you can't get it off, I'll concede it's overwound. More often than not, we hear that with spring-driven clocks, and you can't overwind one of those. It's either wound up fully or it's partially wound, and that's really it. The problem is the clock's worn. The The pivots of the gears have got contaminated with dust over time, which has caused an amount of wear, and it's that wear that's causing the clock to stop. And that's when you need someone like myself to come and overhaul it for you.
Are there any courses or training available these days for repairing and servicing old clocks?
There is some training through the Horological Institute and also through Jewellers and Watchmakers of New Zealand. If you want to find out about it, the best idea is to find a watchmaker or look up the Horological Institute website and make an inquiry that way. But most people will learn on the job. In Switzerland, you can go to a trade, and even America, you can go to a trade school. You can spend a couple of years learning the job. It's not really like that here. You've got to be at the bench in a repair center or shop, learning the trade as you go.
You ever get someone knock on your door, Blair, and say, "Blair, my clock ticks too loudly"?
Occasionally, it's not common, but we tend to get it a little bit with plastic alarm clocks or relatively cheap plastic wall clocks that use a little quartz mechanism. They can have a lot of backlash between the plastic gears, and they can be quite loud. That's not really a big problem because we can replace those mechanisms with silent running ones that don't tick. They sweep, and
Oh
they make no
gosh.
noise at all.
My grandparents had a grandfather clock and it did that tune every 15 minutes. You'd think it'd drive them
Yeah.
crazy, but I guess they didn't hear it anymore. But can you turn that off and on?
It depends on the clock. Some you can, some you can't. A lot of clocks have, especially grandfather clocks, have multi-chimes where you can change between tunes, or they have an on-off switch. And some of them, not very many, but some of them have a night shut-off, which is automatic. So as it comes around to
Oh, yeah,
maybe
that's a
10
good
p.m.,
one.
it stops chiming and then picks it up again at 7
Yeah,
a.m.
that's crazy, isn't it? That you'd be hearing the bells ring every 15 minutes all night long, but I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah, but as you say, it just sort of blends into the background after a while.
Yeah. Is it okay for an automatic watch to sit for a long time? Ask someone.
I would say not too long because the oil does need to be moved occasionally. It's in the watch in very small quantities and in very specific places. Watches are not work in an oil bath. So if you leave it sitting for months at a time, that oil will thicken and crystallize more readily than it will if you pick it up and give it a wind occasionally.
1 minute left. Any advice for taking care of watches that you really want to keep in good nick?
Yeah, just try and keep them clean. And don't swim in them. Don't wear them in the shower. Watches don't need to go in water really unless you've got a very specific need for it. Keep them dry. Just look after them. Dirt will get embedded in especially the links of a steel bracelet, wear away the pins. Wear away the components. Showering's particularly bad on the seals. It puts them through heat cycles where they heat and cool, and they'll lose essential ingredients over time that stop them breaking down.
How many
So
what?
just,
Yeah.
common sense, really.
How many watches do you have?
I think I've got about four personally. I've had more in the past, but I'm really down to just a couple of basics that I wear
Yeah, great. You're showing
all
great restraint, Blair. Thank you very much
the time.
for the interview. I've
Thank
really,
you very much.
really loved talking to you. Thanks, Blair Shellard, our Monday expert on horology.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.